This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune. I'm CNBC senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albracht and Tommy Kester.
Happy Friday. Welcome into Sports Daily. Jacob Albracht, Jad Chambers, Tommy Kester with you on a Friday. We'll be joined a little later by Paul Savage, TJ Cleland, Brandon Zinner. It is a full house on a Friday. We'll make some football picks later in the show. We'll get you ready for it. A great Thursday night football game last night ending in controversy. And a Chiefs roster move breaking, I think, just in the last few minutes here. At least that's when I saw it, that we'll get to as well. It's an interesting morning. It's a Friday morning, and it's always fun. IHOP hotline's open for you, 869-1240. It's brought to you by IHOP. You can celebrate the weekdays with all new IHOP house faves, all your favorites for just $6 Monday through Friday. Tommy, good morning. How are you?
Happy Friday. Good to see you. Getting ready for a huge weekend. Sunflower Showdown, obviously, is always massive, and so that's going to be happening tomorrow, of course, in Manhattan. We'll preview all of that. Of course, the Chiefs in Vegas. Talk about that a lot, too. I'm excited for our Friday football picks next hour. I got to continue on that undefeated streak. So, you should have known that this was coming today, right? Like, I'm going to be talking about that a lot as the show goes on.
We'll be sure and talk about the overall standings, too, and humble ourselves. Because I think I had a week like that not too long ago. It's fine. It'll be good. Hey, if last night's game is an indication of things to come, we're going to make some money this week, if nothing else. Lots of points, lots of stats, lots of yards. That's always good for making money. And last night's game delivered on that. We'll get to Thursday night football here in just a little bit because, you know, being excited about it, all the things we kind of talked about yesterday sort of came true. And then there was controversy at the end for sure. But I want to start with something I saw literally right before we came on the air, Tommy. Field Yates of ESPN reporting at about 7 this morning that with cap space tight after the DeAndre Hopkins trade, the Chiefs restructured the contract of Juwan Taylor, converted some of the salary into a signing bonus that creates just over $5 million in 2024 cap room. I think we need to pay attention to that. Yes, DeAndre Hopkins makes cap space tight, but they can't complete that trade unless they already have the room. So now they've just created $5 million more of cap space. We've pondered this week. Are the Chiefs finished with the trade deadline? When I see that report, I would think, well, they're keeping their options open at minimum.
Yeah, when I see that report, for me, it's more about making sure that they have a little bit of flexibility as the season progresses, even, you know, if you get past the trade deadline, if they need to create some depth or sign a free agent or, you know, whatever that looks like. They've done that. I mean, keep in mind, going into the playoffs, I know at least last season, they made a couple, I think at least one running back acquisition, right? Like right before the postseason. And so those are really easy things to do if you need to provide depth, but you need the cap room to do it. So I don't immediately jump to the conclusion that it means they're still going to be active before the deadline. They might. I mean, I was surprised about Veach making a move for DeAndre Hopkins this week. So they might still go out there and make some other kind of move. But it also probably is more about creating flexibility even once you get later into the season.
Yeah, it's interesting how inverted this is from a year ago, right? Like a year ago, they were off to this great start, 6-1. They were, if I recall, they were pretty healthy at that point. And they didn't do a ton. They went and got Mecole Hardman to bring in, but that was kind of a non-needle mover or anything. You know, the Jets were sort of done with him. That wasn't a fit. And it was like, okay, everything's good. Then the trade deadline passes and the wheels fall off. So it was like, well, you're good with this. Like, this is what you've got right now. And you know, I think that's where some of the, you know, the concern came in when ultimately it was enough. And Rashee Rice's emergence about that same time cured what ailed him anyway. This year, it's sort of the opposite. They've had all the balls bounce their way in game, certainly not out of game because of all the injuries, but they're 6-0, and they have the opportunity to look at things now and see the injuries and the things that could go wrong and try to do everything they can to hopefully bolster themselves, you know, for the inevitability that maybe the ball doesn't always bounce your way. Now, they've built up enough cushion. This is all about the Super Bowl to me. Like, it's, you know, they're going to be fine in the regular season this year. So it's all about the Super Bowl. And I do applaud them for, you used the word complacency early in the week. I love this. And I think this is all smart. And I you know, I think it might be necessary. That's hard to predict. But I think it's at least worth considering as you make your way through. Can there be anything else, the Chiefs, if you're Brett Veach, can we do anything else over the next 2 weeks to position ourselves better than we are now? Because right now, it's great that we're 6-0. We could just as easily be 3-3. What can we do to make sure we get that third Super Bowl? And I think that's a very smart thing they're doing. And I think seeing that just kind of furthers that. Like, keep the door open for anything that might come up.
And if they do end up making some other kind of acquisition before the trade deadline, if Veach goes out and is able to work a trade with another team, based on what happened last week in San Francisco, I think that, for me at least, the priority shifts a little bit. Of course, they bring in DeAndre Hopkins, and I've heard a lot of chatter about could they go get another wide receiver and maybe do a pick swap or something and send a seventh rounder to a team to bring in more depth at wide receiver. For me, honestly, it's more about secondary help with Jalen Watson going down at this point, just based on what happened last week and the fact that they went out and got DeAndre Hopkins. And I know we've talked about left tackle and could they do anything there. That's more difficult to do at the trade deadline just because of the quality of players or just the players in general that are even going to be offered on the market. You could probably get secondary help if you absolutely needed to. But again, Brett Veach is not going to overpay. And so, going to be, I think, something to keep in mind as well, because we haven't heard of a lot of cornerbacks that are being shopped right now. It's always wide receivers, right? That's a really like prime target by the trade deadline nowadays. You don't hear about a ton of cornerbacks that are being offered up, but there are a couple of teams that you might look at. I mean, look at the one-win teams that are in the NFL right now that are going to need to, like the Browns or the Panthers. Like, are there secondary pieces that they would want to unload to rebuild for the future? I don't know. I don't think it's likely. I think this is more of a flexibility type move for down the road. But if they were to do something, that's where my priority is now.
Yeah, look, I agree, and they're not going to. They didn't overpay for DeAndre
Hopkins.
They didn't.
No, 100%.
They paid appropriately, I think. It was just about, you know, perfect on both sides.
Shoot, the Titans are paying more for DeAndre Hopkins now than the Chiefs.
Right. And the Titans, for what, you know, they had the ability to eat the money. And, you know, if it turns into a fourth round pick, that's a pretty good return on DeAndre Hopkins. He wasn't helping them at all. I mean, just look at the Chiefs and who they've been taking in the third and fourth rounds to know that that's a pretty good return if you draft right. So, yeah, I don't think they're going to overpay. I think you look at the secondary for sure, although they probably feel pretty good about their two young players there. I think you try to look at the offensive line if it's at all possible, of course. That's the least likely. But I think you can also look at pass rush. And I think in all of it, you're going to be looking for older players on expiring contracts where, you know, some money can be eaten. You've already given up potentially a fifth or fourth round pick. How much more are you willing to give up? Probably not anything more than, you know, a sixth or a seventh, I wouldn't think, unless it's a real impact type of player. The Chiefs are also going to need to be retooling a little bit next year, depending on if they can bring back Trey Smith. And they're still, you know, maybe not satisfied at left tackle. I think they'll be satisfied at wide receiver to some degree. So that maybe they don't have to invest there again. But we'll see what happens with Rashee Rice's situation and Hollywood Brown and all those things. I just think they're leaving the option open, and I think it's the right thing to do. Because as we look around the NFL, I think there are teams in Buffalo and Baltimore who were contenders who got way better, filling the Ravens with Derrick Henry, of course, but then Buffalo by bringing in Cooper. We'll see if the Jets can ever get their head screwed on straight defensively for the trade they made to matter, Devontae Adams. And then we see a team like last night. You know, the Rams are not as bad as people thought. We loved the Rams yesterday. I did, and PJ Glasser was with me. And it played out. Like you could almost see it coming a mile away. The Vikings off of that tough Lions game, and the Rams, not only did they get Cooper Kupp back, but they got Puka Nacua back. Like, don't forget, the Rams are pretty good. That pick swap trade that everyone talks about with DeMarcus Robinson, by the way, that ain't happening. The Rams are right back. The Rams are right back in it.
I started thinking as Robinson, you know, was pulling in those touchdown receptions last night. I kept thinking, well, his value's shooting through the roof. I don't think the Rams are moving him or anybody else at this point. And I just had this thought of like Brett Veach watching that game and probably going into the game thinking that he might be able to be a little stealth and sneaky in acquiring DeMarcus Robinson and having him come back to Kansas City. Yeah, that ain't happening now.
No. No, and I don't think it was before either, because his value to them is much higher than it would be to anybody else.
Had the Rams lost that game, though, and if Robinson had done a whole lot of nothing, then at that point, yeah, like, I mean, the Rams were placing calls about Cooper Kupp. So if they were willing to do that, had the Rams lost last night, I think they would have been willing to make a phone call or at least have a conversation about DeMarcus Robinson.
The other piece of that is what the 49ers are going through right now. To me, if I'm looking at all the teams in that division, and we'll get into the game last night in our next segment, the Rams would be the team to beat based on the roster that is on the field. Now, they've dealt with their own injuries. It's amazing how much better an offense can look when you bring in two Pro Bowl wide receivers.
Sure.
One Hall of Fame wide receiver in Cooper Kupp. So, like, don't count them out. I think bigger picture to as it pertains to the Chiefs, is you look at these things and you have to think about the entire field. And this is unique to the Chiefs this year, by the way. I don't think always it's this way, but man, that history is sitting there for the Chiefs. And that is the part for me that's always made this season a little bit different. Travis Kelce may be done after this year. Who knows what Andy Reid's going to do? Patrick Mahomes is getting, you know, he's not old, but he's getting older. There's a lot that just sits there this year as like, maybe you put the bookmark at this chapter and then maybe, you know, the Patriots had two dynasties within a dynasty. I don't know if that's going to happen to the Chiefs. I don't think it will, but it'll be very different when Travis Kelce's gone and if Andy Reid ever retires and if, you know, all of these great players they've had just get too expensive. Like, they're going to have to at some point take a breath, catch up, and reload a little bit. They've done such a great job of stretching that out as much as they can. But there's no reason to me to not push it all in for this year to try to get that historic mark while you still have all these people. So when I see things like creating cap space, it makes my eyes light up because it tells me, they want to make sure that they've done everything they can possibly do by the time we get to January to give themselves a chance to make history. There's a reason it's never been done, right? It's difficult. This kind of year can fall into your lap where all your wide receivers get hurt or, you know, all the weird, stupid, fluky things that happen in the NFL. And so the Chiefs, now who know they're going to be fine in the regular season, what can you do to get better for the postseason? What can you do to make sure these teams who have all gotten better around you haven't passed you up?
Normally, I would actually disagree with that. I mean, and that's really been my, you know, thought process for most of this season. Going into it, they went back-to-back, trying to three-peat, all of that. Really, the DeAndre Hopkins trade has kind of changed my viewpoint on all of this because I entered into this season, and really, even as they went 6-0, I really believed that Brett Veach's mentality as the general manager was stay the course. We don't get off of what we usually do. We do what we do. If we continue to do what we do, then that means that we're going to continue to strive to go play in the postseason and to win another Super Bowl, but we're not going to shift off of that to go and try to acquire people or try to do things like big splashy things to push all of our chips in this season, the future be damned. That really wasn't what I thought was going to happen. And I'm not saying that that has happened, but my mentality has shifted a little bit. I'm not going to lie. When Veach acquired Hopkins earlier this week, that kind of shook me a little bit because it completely, in my mind, turned that philosophy kind of upside down because it was a high profile move for a team that I really thought they were going to say, we do what we do and we are going to continue to keep our heads down, roll with the guys that we've got and, you know, continue to try to just not only win now, but not mortgage our future also in the process. They haven't done that. But I really felt like the DeAndre Hopkins move was of a higher consequence than what I thought they would do. And here's another realization that I had surrounding all of that. Going back to us talking about DeMarcus Robinson and the Rams, there were all of those reports a couple of days ago that the Chiefs had conversations with the Rams about Cooper Kupp. Obviously, the financials didn't work out. The Rams, I guess, weren't willing to eat enough of Kupp's contract to be able to make it work. The Titans were with DeAndre Hopkins. That's why the deal went down the way that it did. If the Chiefs and the Rams had conversations about Cooper Kupp, you better believe they also had conversations about DeMarcus Robinson. Sure. Like those conversations, I guarantee, also happened between those two teams. The Chiefs could have very easily said, yeah, you're not really able to take on the contract or most of the contract for Cooper Kupp. Let's go ahead and get a deal done with DeMarcus Robinson. That's not going to be a major deal, but it does add depth. And he's got familiarity with the team, with all of that, the organization and the philosophies and everything. They didn't do that. They went back and they traded for DeAndre Hopkins. That's a higher profile move. It's a move of more consequence, hopefully in a positive way for Kansas City. That's a different mentality than what I thought they were going to do.
And I think what we have overlooked is when we try to compare it to last year, their desperation to do something came after the trade deadline, right? It wasn't like they couldn't do anything at the point where things were unraveling on them. And so, like we've said a billion times, like I'm not picking any of these teams to beat the Chiefs right now in the postseason, because I think how could you, based on what we see in those individual games? But that doesn't mean that it can't happen. It doesn't mean that, you know, the Chiefs have won some really, really close games in the postseason over these last 2 years. So, like, if I was to look at it, and I think this is how you have to approach it if you're the front office right now. We watched that game last night, which, again, we'll talk about in just a little bit. If I told you right now that the Chiefs are going to play the Rams in the Super Bowl, what is that? A 4-point spread? Like, that's not some definitive, like, oh, they would kill them. No, they wouldn't. And that's the Rams, right? Could you say that about the Ravens, the Texans, the Bills, the Steelers? Could you say that about the Lions, the Vikings, the Packers? No, I don't think that you can. So why would you just sit still? Like, the teams that will compete are all good. And, you know, based on what we've seen this year, just be realistic with it. The Chiefs can get better. They've got room to get better. For sure they do. And so I think that they're just doing all the due diligence they can to make sure they're in the best possible position when the time comes. They didn't get that luxury last year. Things unraveled after they got off to a great start. They didn't feel like they needed to. The DeAndre Hopkins move is a big move. It's a big move. They don't expect Juju Smith-Schuster to be out the rest of the year. Even if he's out 2-3 weeks, he'll be back. Mark, you know, Hollywood Brown could be back. Rashee Rice probably won't be back. Worthy will have developed for another few weeks. Like, they have the firepower. Isaiah Pacheco's coming back. That still doesn't mean they can't get better on the lines. Doesn't mean they can't try to make up for the Watson injury now. They've been, you know, we can laugh about how it's all piled up at the beginning of the season. But there's, you know, you can look at that glass half full and say, well, at least they have time to react to it. because it's before the trade deadline.
It all comes down for me to their identity compared to every other team that you listed off a couple of moments ago about legitimate Super Bowl contenders and what the Chiefs' identity is. They've been this year, it's different. We've talked about it at length. A different kind of team, a different kind of identity than what we've seen in years past from the Chiefs. What makes them so dangerous and why I, at this point, am not willing to pick any other team against them is because the way that the Chiefs have beaten opponents is death by a thousand paper cuts.
Absolutely.
There's nothing right now with this team that is flashy that will beat the opponent. There just isn't. And it's a team that has always been flashy. There's not a whole lot flashy about it. Now, there'll be individual moments here and there. Mahomes had a couple of runs last week that were pretty flashy and fun. But with all of the must-see TV SportsCenter top 10 moments over the last 5 or 6 years with Mahomes at the helm, that's not the identity of this team. Meanwhile, I'm just going to use this one team as an example. There are others like it. The Ravens are explosive. With yep. Derrick Henry and Lamar Jackson, they're like a grenade going off, right? The Chiefs can sneak up on you, and all of a sudden it's like, wait, how did this happen? Like Patrick Mahomes just threw for 130 yards, and he had no touchdowns, and he threw two interceptions. How in the world did we get beat? Meanwhile, Lamar is putting up 400 yards through the air, and Derrick Henry's running all over the opponents. And, you know, they're a really good team, obviously, too. But you can see them coming. You can see the Ravens. You can see every other team coming. You know, by and large, what a lot of these other teams are going to do. You don't know how the Chiefs do it, but they do it and they get it done. And that's it's what makes them so dangerous.
It's the defense. It's, you know, they're a better version this year than they were last year when things were unraveling. Now, they grew into themselves by the time the playoffs and the postseason hit. They just got to start this year where they ended last year. They know that's what they want to do. Another good example, I just look back. You were making me think of the old Chiefs and how they were flashy. They traded for Melvin Ingram right before the trade deadline in like 2021. That was the kind of move I think they're still setting themselves up to be able to make. Where is a really good play, just like D-Hop, where's a really good player who hadn't had a chance to win that could come in, give us, even if it's limited snaps, and make an impact on a game? Those are the kinds of things. I think they're gonna try to do something else. What started this entire conversation is they restructured Juwan Taylor to free up about $5 million of money. And yes, that happens after the D-Hop move, but they couldn't have made the D-Hop move if it didn't fit in the cap. They were already in the cap. They freed this money up to keep their options open.
I'm going to give you one name because you mentioned somebody that's a veteran defensively that they can make a splash kind of along the same lines as DeAndre Hopkins. I don't think they'll do it, but man, I think a Buda Baker trade would be outstanding. The Browns are bad. The Chiefs need secondary help. He's a veteran. He can join a contender immediately and play for a Super Bowl. That would be the kind of move that I think you're referencing.
I would, if I'm guessing right now, I would guess that the Chiefs will make another move, and I think the most likely move is pass rusher. I'm excited about it. Let's make the team. Again, it's the inverted Patriots, to your point. The Chiefs were flashy at the beginning of the dynasty and now have morphed into this team. Nobody can figure out how they beat them every week. Just the opposite of what the Patriots did in theirs, right? Those early years, it was like, how is this team beating us and winning Super Bowls? And then it got flashy, right? And then Brady started to pile up the yard. We flipped it upside down here.
By the way, I said the Browns, he plays for the Cardinals. I mean, the Cardinals should move Buda Baker and have him be able to be joining a contender and competing for a Super Bowl.
I would be on the phone with San Francisco over the next 2 weeks if something else bad happens to them and ask about Charvarius Ward. That's who I would ask about.
Yeah.
I would most like to see them go after a pass rusher, and I do think that's the most likely when we talk about older veteran type players that might become available. Melvin Ingram's a great example of that in doing that kind of move. All right, we're over it. Let's talk about the game last night. That was a great game. I thought it was an impactful game too in the NFC. Thursday Night Football with a controversy at the end of that game for sure. That's next on Sports Daily. Albrecht and Caster, don't go away.
For
portion of the program brought to you by Crestview Country Club. Fall at the club. There's still golf, tennis, glow-in-the-dark triples is coming up. It's a one-time-per-year special event, Halloween-themed triples event. They black out the indoor courts. They light everything up. High energy. Got the music going. Drinks a la carte. It's triples, which means you'd be a part of a team of three or four, taking on other teams of three or four, and then you rotate after every point. Costume contest. Prizes will be available. Check it out, Crestview Country Club, more than golf. Although I did play about 7 holes of golf yesterday.
A little windy out there. Did you blow away?
Just before the wind picked up about hole probably 5 or 6.
Okay.
When I was out there. And then I just ran out of time. So it timed out just about right for me. But it was nice to get out there. That's one of the things I like about it. Busy schedule. Get out there, get as much as I can, and then get on with my day. Tommy, I forgot all about this. It's the exhibition game tonight for KU in
it
Arkansas.
Is. Yeah.
8 o'clock. That's going to be very interesting to see. So we'll definitely be keeping our eye on that tonight for sure. I'm curious to see it, but I know Hunter Dickinson yesterday, I think they announced he's not going to play.
Right.
Which honestly, I kind of like that for KU because we know what Hunter Dickinson's going to bring to the table. I kind of want to see all these other players, right? So it doesn't break my heart. Just be careful. No reason not to. But that'll be fun tonight. Arkansas, of course, will be good with John Calipari there now.
Always fun Thursday to watch Bill Self and Calipari face off against each other, by the way.
Right. Yeah, maybe they'll get in an old man fist fight. That'd be awesome. No, they won't in an exhibition. These exhibition games are pretty cool. And I think it's a charity game again this time.
Yeah.
So that I wish that we would get that across the country. Bill Self did this last year for the, you know, to help with the wildfires out in Maui. They played Illinois. So, and I love that KU's going on the road to do these games too. They did that at the Illinois game. They're doing it again. Bill Self has always been a master of challenging his team early and getting them ready for what will be coming late in the year. So that game is tonight. Wichita State's exhibition is next week. And I believe K-State's
on Sunday. Wichita State's exhibition is Sunday.
The 28th, 27th?
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Let me just look. Just while we're on this, let me look just so I don't say the wrong thing. Let me see when K-State basketball.
Theirs is not until next week.
That's what it is. Theirs is the one next week. That's correct. Right. Okay. So you get Wichita State's this weekend, which again will be fascinating. I would imagine we won't see Monte unless something crazy happens. It's Tuesday that we get K-State's. Then you get another week or so of a break before the actual starts of season. So we'll have a lot of basketball to talk about on Monday, for sure, with between KU and Wichita State. Football Friday here on the program. Vikings-Rams, it delivered. We hoped it would deliver. Went over like we hoped. Two good offenses, although the Vikings fell really flat after the first two drives of the game for some reason. That was sort of interesting to see happen. But the Rams get all their firepower back, and then all of a sudden, they look really good on offense. And, oh, yeah, Matt Stafford's really good. And, oh, yeah, they got two really good wide receivers there who have been out most of the season. And, you know, all the things we thought about the game, and we didn't even know Nacua was going to play when we were talking about it yesterday morning, and it delivered. But how about that call at the end of the game? That's as bad as it gets if you're the Vikings. That was as clear a face mask with everything on the line, with the officials as close to that play as they ever will be because it was in the end zone. They're never that close to the play. I mean, there were two officials staring right at it. How on earth do you miss that call? I mean, that's as bad as it gets.
Yeah, it was a bad call, number one. Number two, you know, when you're in that kind of position, you have so many referees that are out on the field, and the explanation officially was that no referee had a good look at it. Then there's
they were right there.
Then there's an issue with the positioning, like where the referees are. If nobody, and I don't buy that nobody had a good look at it, but if that's really accurate and the truth, then they need to work on where they're positioning, because how can you not have a good look at the quarterback in the end zone? Like because everybody knows, like, when you are that deep in your own territory and the quarterback is going to drop back into his own end zone, that there's probably going to be pressure brought on the quarterback. There is nowhere else on the field for the officials to be looking than right there. So the fact that nobody had a good look at it, and you know, this is just the insaneness, I guess, of just how NFL challenges work and all. Like, that play's not reviewable. Like, a penalty like that is not reviewable. Like, how do we have some things reviewable and some things not? Like, I just don't understand that part of it. Bad call all the way around. But I do, the caveat I do want to say, there's no guarantee that Sam Darnold would have led the team down, because they would have needed to score a touchdown and a two-point conversion to tie at that point. There's no guarantee that had happened because, of course, as you mentioned, the Vikings offense after the first couple of drives really kind of fell apart. So, you know, it's unfortunate it happened that way, but I think the people that are saying, you stole a victory from the Vikings. There's no way
but
that you can say that.
There's also no need to miss that call. By the way, Justin Jefferson's on that team. You throw up a couple, who knows, right? Like, but they had plenty of time to drive down the field. Like, that's what made it so annoying. They had almost 2 minutes to get down the field with perhaps the NFL's best offensive player on that team. Like, come on now, refs. And why do we overcomplicate replay in all sports? This should not be that hard. If there is a blatant missed call, you have somebody watching and you say, nope, that is, you guys missed it. There was a face mask there. It's not hard. We should be able to do that now. We know we can because they do it on other plays. Do it for every single play. Every single play takes 2 seconds for somebody to buzz down to the official and be like, you missed that. That's not the right call. We're starting to see that introduced in other places. Certain calls get like flipped all the time now. Just make it for every call. It's not hard.
And it's not that particular call. Like, the face mask right there is objective. It is definitive.
Yeah,
it's
like
definitive.
That one's not even difficult,
right? Like, it's not like a pass interference where you have to judge the impact of something or how deliberate it was or whatever. Like, it's not subjective in that regard. It's pretty easy. It's pretty cut and dry. Did the guy grab the face mask or not? And in that case, he did. It's unfortunate for the Vikings that, ultimately that was the end of their opportunity to push the ball down the field. You were talking about the Rams, by the way, and everything with Nacua and Kupp and Stafford threw the ball great. My concern, if you'll recall yesterday going into the game, was how long is it going to take for that offense to click on all cylinders? Will there be a little bit of a ramp-up period that they'll need to go through? Really, there wasn't. And if there was, early in the game, the Rams really fed the ball to Kyren Williams, and I think that was something that I didn't even think about. Like, if it did take a while, potentially, for that offense, or at least for the passing game, to start to click again or start to get more comfortable or whatever with those guys returning to the lineup, then all they have to do is just start feeding Kyren Williams and he'll get them going. And that's exactly what happened. I said worst case scenario for the Rams would be that it would take a minute for that offense to start to come around again. It didn't at all. And that was the most impressive thing about the game.
They were ready to roll. Impressive. I'm glad that they're in it. I really like Matt Stafford. I have become a big fan of Sean McVay. So I'm glad that they're in it. I'm glad that they're good because I think Stafford is incredible. I think Stafford, had he played on different teams and had better chances to win, would be in that conversation, you know, of not just Hall of Fame, where I think he'll be there, but like, you know, one of those quarterbacks we talk about when we talk about the best that have played the game, his arm talent. I mean, he makes, I don't want to say as many, but he probably makes more like wacky, incredible physical throws than anybody not named Patrick Mahomes. And he's done that for years, right? He just played for a really crap franchise for a long time that's now turned it around, ironically, after they traded him for Jared Goff, who is maybe the number two guy for the MVP right now. But I think they're a cool team, and I've always been a fan of the Vikings too. That was a fun game. It delivered, and I hope it's precursor of the weekend and we get a fun NFL weekend. For the Vikings, 2 losses in a row, I'm not worried at all about them. It doesn't impact what I think of their chances to go do something special. I don't think they're going to anyway, but this doesn't change that opinion. By any means, their offense fell flat for a while, and credit probably goes to the Rams for that. Not totally sure, but they're going to get Hawkinson back at some point too and get even more dangerous offensively. But a great game. Two good teams, two contenders, I think, in the NFC for sure.
By the way, I traded TJ Hawkinson in one of my fantasy leagues earlier this week just because I'd had him and I had him on IR for quite a while. It was actually our dynasty league that you and I are in.
Didn't you trade him to me?
No, I traded him to somebody else in that league. I had him on.
I think you traded him to me, too.
That was, I had him in another league. In our dynasty league that you and I are in, I had him on IR, had him there for a long time, and I kept expecting eventually he would come back, and I know he will, but I had the offer because it's a dynasty league to be able, like, we get draft picks, and I wanted a draft pick, and so I traded Hawkinson for a second.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.
Rounder.
Yeah, he's good. He'll be back. I thought he'd be back this week. I bet it's next week. Yeah, you traded him to me too. I couldn't wait. Be patient.
I could. Well, but also I've had other tight ends that I, you know, feel have stepped up and I feel pretty confident about.
Hey, thanks a lot. I don't have any. I really could have used him. You could have traded him to me twice. All right, let's take a break. We'll come back. World Series starts tonight too. So we've got some things out there coming tonight. We got top of the hour football picks incoming. I'm excited. We got a lot of fun ones to do there. So it's all Brockton Caster. The IHOP hotline is open. We'll get to a voice message through the Odyssey app when we return as well. It's all coming for you on Sports Daily. Don't go away.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
Win a prize here, our HTO text to win contest. You can enter by texting the keyword T right now to the short code 20357. What that'll get you is a free iced tea card featuring new seasonal flavor peach cobbler, by the way, as well as a free iced or hot coffee drink from HTO as well. Lots of options to choose from. These are good for East Wichita, West Wichita, or in Derby. And again, you can enter. All you got to do is text the keyword T to the short code 20357. You can enter once per day. Message and data rates apply. Good luck. Tommy, just stunning, terrible news yesterday. South Florida basketball coach Amir Abdur-Rahim dies at 43 and a medical procedure had complications. One of the real risers in college basketball. Just an incredible story last year. I was floored by that. 43 years old. That is a stunner and just terrible news.
Yeah, he was absolutely one of the young, exciting college basketball coaching stars over the last couple of years and what he did at South Florida. Remember, they won the American a year ago, and nobody really thought that that was going to happen, and they did. They were a really good team last season, and he took, what was it, Kennesaw State, you know, to new heights before he got the job at South Florida. Really just stunning, out of the blue, unexpected, all of those different things. And you know, especially, and I'm not even thinking about this from a basketball standpoint. It's more about just a emotional standpoint. It happening so close to the start of the season with his players and his fellow coaches getting ready for this season, preparing, all of that. And then to have this happen just out of the blue right before the season starts has got to be absolutely devastating for his entire team.
I just can't believe it. Like, I can't, but I just saw it yesterday. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
What is going on? Like, he's a young guy. He's about our age. And it's just a reminder, man. So just feel terrible for his family, for those players. But that news, if you missed it yesterday, I know Shocker fans are well-versed in just how good a job he did last year. But yeah, Amir Abdur Rahim died 43 years old. Tommy, we've got the World Series coming up tonight. Which I'm excited about. All of a sudden, my evening now with, you know, World Series and KU's exhibition game, like, it just turned into a pretty good little sports night. And of course, we have Friday Night Football. Like, here we go. Like, we always use these Fridays to, like, springboard us into what's coming on Saturday and Sunday. Can't overlook Friday this week. I don't even know. Are there good college football games on tonight? Like, I know they've been really hammering home on Friday nights, but here we go.
Did you watch Syracuse and Pitt last night?
I did not. No, I had it.
Well, we took our kids bowling. It was our 3-year-old's first time to ever go bowling before, and he loved it. He had a great time. But they had the Syracuse Pitt game on while we were at the bowling alley, and Pitt ran all over Syracuse. And Kyle McCord, quarterback for Syracuse. The one thing that went viral was, I think he was sacked like 6 times in the game, and he had a viral moment where he sacked himself. I don't know if you saw that or not. At the very end of the game, dropping back, tripped over his own feet and went down. It was a disaster for Syracuse last night.
I can tell you that my interest level in that game was zero. No offense to...
I wouldn't have had it on had it not been on at the bowling alley.
No, I was not. I will tell you, though, just looking tonight, I don't have any interest in Louisville-Boston College. I don't have much interest in Rutgers-USC.
Boise State-UNLV. I mean, that's...
But
you know,
I got interest in Boise State-UNLV.
That's a late game, too.
Give me some Jainty. And UNLV, who's been this great story. They were one of the teams that beat KU, slight home dog, but that's a fascinating game too. Jainty, I've got a buddy who's a Boise State fan. We laugh, like the props will come out on Jainty. It's like 190 yards or something. And you're sure. Like, that's just, and he hits it every time. It's just ridiculous. I put a Heisman bet in on him after, I think, week one or two. So now I think he's the favorite, or he's the second favorite, and I got him at long odds. So I'm really looking forward to that. But he has just been out of this world. I don't remember a college running back. Somebody brought up Barry Sanders, like the way they've dominated at the level. It's just what, like, if you're playing Boise, what would you do? You'd put everybody, you put 12 guys in the box, you know, whatever it takes. And they still can't stop him. All right, let's get into this message we teased a little bit. Ken left us a message about the NBA. The NBA is underway. This is through the Odyssey app. You can leave us these voice messages. You push the little microphone and you can leave them. So here's Ken's message. I have no idea what this is on the NBA.
Good morning, gents. Last night on the best sports talk show around, present company excluded, inside the NBA, Charles Barkley proclaimed that our neighbors to the south, the Oklahoma Thunder, are going to win the Western Division of the NBA. That's kind of an exciting way to start the season off. Also, just a reminder that we just got one heck of a World Series starting tonight. Just studs up and down the lineups of both teams. Should be just an awesome show. Okay, back to the deep dive into the NFL cap. Thank you.
Yeah,
love that.
I like that. For, you know, Barkley, his predictions are one thing. He's the best. But yeah, the Thunder. Who would you pick over the Thunder the way they ended last year? And I will say, I've seen Barkley calling out Joel Embiid and the NBA players, and I love it so much. This injury management, like, we're playing basketball here. It's physically taxing, but you're not digging ditches. Like, get out there and play. Fans are spending a ton of money to consume your sport. Get your butt out there and play, unless you're actively hurt. Load management. It's a load of something is what it is, in my humble opinion.
By the way, I didn't know this, and, you know, Ken brought up the World Series starting tonight. I've read this morning that there are 5 former MVPs that are on collectively the roster of both of these teams playing in the World Series. If all 5 of them will play in the same game, if that ends up happening, that'll be the first time that's ever happened. There have been 4 MVPs that have played in a World Series game at the same time. hasn't happened since 1971. The Baltimore Orioles had four MVPs that all played in that World Series. If five between the two teams happens at any point, probably will. It's never happened before. Do you know the five players? Can you name them?
Shohei Judge, of course. Clayton Kershaw, did he get an MVP?
No, he didn't get an MVP.
Okay, so then Freddie Freeman would be three.
Stanton is four.
Mookie?
Stanton.
Oh, then they'll for sure all five play. Stanton got an MVP?
Yeah, he did.
Giancarlo Stanton got an MVP?
He sure did.
Oh, I don't remember that. Wow, really? That's crazy. All right, hour number two, football picks coming. Here we go. We'll talk a little high school football as well. It is a Catch a Kansas Friday. Stick around. Sports Daily is coming right back.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.
Money Movers provides investors with real-time analysis of the stories and the people attracting the attention of markets each day. I'm Carl Quintanilla.
And I'm Sarah Eisen. We'll cover the breaking news and numbers driving stocks and sectors, helping you make critical decisions. Plus, we'll speak with the CEOs, newsmakers, and political leaders playing a role in how your money is moving.
Listen to CNBC's Money Movers free on the Odyssey app.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.